Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Now, the term rewilding, it's bandied about a lot. But what exactly does it mean? If I let a piece of the garden go wild, am I rewilding? Or are we talking about much larger tracts of land like farms, forests, estates and even national parks? Well, Pádraig Fógarty of the Irish Wildlife Trust joins me here in the studio. And on the line, Randall Plunkett, 21st Baron of Dunsany Castle and Domain, who has given over a third of his land to rewilding. And you're both very welcome. Thank you for being with us today. Pádraig, I'm going to start with you because I want to just get a handle on what this is, because there is that dilemma where people think that they know what rewilding is, but they're not quite sure. Can you just define it for us?
Yeah, so there has been a lot of confusion about it. But it's important to note that last year, the International Union for the Conservation of Nature published a paper supported by the scientific community that identified rewilding as extremely important as part of our response to the climate and biodiversity emergency. So really what we want to do, what we want to get out of rewilding is the restoration of our natural ecosystems. Now, this is important because in Ireland, we don't have any natural ecosystems. We've basically destroyed them all. And this matters because our land at the moment...
Say that again? We've destroyed them all.
Pretty much, yes. Our native forests are about 1% of our land. We don't have any healthy bogs. Our seas have basically been destroyed and overfished from bottom trawling. So the human pressure in Ireland is more or less 100%. And rewilding is a chance to reverse that damage.
Mm-hmm. And our other guest, Randall, and I know you know Randall well, is using part of your estate, Randall. You're very welcome. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So this estate was used in its entirety for agriculture, was it?
Pretty much, yeah. It was one of the largest farms in the country for the longest period of time. My great relatives were pioneers in creating sort of the modern agricultural structures that we have today. There was at one point more than 1,000 cattle here at the beginning of the century. So we were very much on the cutting edge of industrial agriculture. But now times have changed. Climate change is the fight of our time, mm-hmm. and we are trying to be on the cutting edge of the next transformation, if you like.
So you inherited how long ago? About 10 years ago?
A bit more than that, yeah, about 10 years ago.
And did you make the decision straight away that you would do this?
Pretty much, yeah.
So tell me about that, because easy conversion to make, I'm sure.
No, and I had quite a few awkward conversations, I'll tell you. But the thing was is that part of my job here has always been to preserve history. I have to preserve the buildings, preserve the people's contributions to history here. And one thing that I think has been neglected largely in the past was how important our nature is to our culture. You know, this is a country that celebrates its language, celebrates its history, but we're not celebrating our nature, and we would have very little without our nature. It was nature that fed us. It's nature that will give us a future.
And when you talk about awkward conversations, were they family conversations or do they go beyond that?
Well, let's just say I got called idiot a lot. Mm-hmm. the thing is like this is a new idea. This at the time was quite a new idea. And I didn't really have a name for it because rewilding was a term that got popular a few years ago. But 10, 11 years ago, it wasn't really a buzzword. So we called it nature conservation at the time. But nature conservation isn't a very sexy term. Rewilding is far more sexy.
Yeah, and you
see, better on a t-shirt.
The reason why people are so uncomfortable with this is because you can't make money from rewilding your land.
No, not in this country. And the problem is that long-term thinking, you can't base our future on what you get today. And the problem is that this is something that has to happen all the way around the world. The UN has said that we need to rewild an area the size of China to combat some of the problems we're having. Now, what is Ireland doing about that? Because everybody needs to do something. Ireland's doing very little. They're trying. We're not going to discount that there's efforts being made, but they're not enough. Mm-hmm. So it's gotten to the point where I myself said it's time to either stop complaining and do something. So I did.
And not everybody is happy about this. I read in an interview that you did about a year ago that you have faced some confrontation, to put it mildly, in the local area.
There has always been problems. But the thing is with this sort of idea, any changing of a paradigm is always going to create a knee-jerk reaction. But this is something that's very natural. This is something that we need to celebrate, something that we need to endorse, because this is our culture. This is part of our heritage. And more than that, it's part of our future. And if we don't do anything now, it doesn't matter that there's no money today. There won't be anything tomorrow, because this is a largely agricultural country. We're very dependent on the climate. And one season where there's no rain, most of the farming is going to be destroyed in this country. So we need to plan ahead. And rewilding is one tool that we can use to try and offset that. And there's no point blaming the Chinese or blaming the Russians or blaming the Americans. What do we do in this country is what we have to start with, and then the rest will follow.
Can we all contribute to this, Padraig?
Yes, I think the most important way we can contribute to it is raising our voice about it, and particularly making it a more political issue. Obviously, we can rewild our gardens and our public spaces in towns and cities, and that's valuable and important. But we have to recognise that the seriousness of the ecological crisis that we have in Ireland, it's not just important for, you know, wildlife and butterflies, it's important to people. It's absolutely crucial for the future of our civilisation. Rewilding is so important because it gives us hope that we can recover. Nature is more or less waiting in the wings if we can give us some time and space. But we have great difficulty in Ireland giving wild nature any space, never mind time.
Landowners have to eat, and the people who rely on the land for their income, they have to eat too. So should we be encouraging people by rewarding them financially for doing what Randall has done?
Yeah, absolutely. This is crucial part of the jigsaw. At the moment, we spend billions in subsidies, which are mostly damaging to nature. So we could redirect those subsidies to encourage landowners to help to restore native forests, restore bogs, to reflood land for rivers, for instance. So paying farmers for these things is something that we have to do. And I should say, it's not a case that we exclusively need to rewind the entire country. High nature value farming is an important part of this as well. Farming is an important part of our culture, and that should go hand in hand with
rewilding. What's high nature value farming?
So it's basically producing food in a way that doesn't destroy nature. At the moment, we have an agricultural system that produces greenhouse gases, is disastrous for biodiversity and pollutes our waterways. So farming in a way that doesn't involve chemicals and works with nature.
I'm sure, Randall, that's something that you're exploring if you're not already doing.
We are trying to evolve things. The thing is industrial farming is largely accused of being the destroyer, and it has definitely come at a cost. But the way I see things is we managed to feed the world with industrial farming, but now we're at a stage at the cost of nature. Now we're at the stage where we need to evolve industrial farming into a more environmentally friendly way and still feed the world and also protect our environment, because we don't have one without the other, and we've been largely neglecting the other.
Can you describe to me what happened with the land that you allowed to grow back to its natural state?
Well, at first, I should say that I'm not a scientist. When I started this, I had a spider sense, if you like. So a lot of this was discovery through doing. When I started, I didn't know what would happen. I kind of wanted to see what would happen. And the local farmers told me that the whole place would explode full of ragwort and thistles and the land would be destroyed. And I didn't believe them. Well, I was wrong. It absolutely blew up full of thistles and ragwort. Okay. And ironically, at first I tried to do things by hand, pull ragwort, that sort of thing. But gradually I gave up. And as time went on, the land stopped. I started seeing ragwort disappearing, and instead wildflowers and different kinds of ferns, silverweed, all these kinds of things started appearing. Because what I discovered, Claire, was the default setting is biodiversity. And that's the power of rewilding, because it's not that we have to do so much. We have to give nature time, because the whole power of rewilding is it regenerates itself. The only problem is it takes a bit of time, a couple of years, in fact. But the advances were fantastic. Insects have exploded. We had a massive amounts of different grasses and different flowers and plants that I'd never seen before. We have averaged at least one animal return per year. And animals are very important to the whole equation, because I don't think people realize that creating movement for animals helps bring pollination across, bring seeds, because we need constant fresh genes into areas. Otherwise, you have stagnation, and that creates rot and disease. And we have to be very careful with that, especially in this country where we've taken out much of our hedgerows and our tree corridors. So it is a problem, and it can create a problem down the line. We may not see the first signs of it yet, but it will come.
With these, new creatures coming back in, I'm just wondering, is the ecosystem complete yet? So you have, I know you have deer there, don't you?
Deer, we've had the return of the otter. We've had woodpeckers for the first time in 100 years. We have red kites. We have buzzards. We have peregrine falcons. We have owls. We have had all these things. And the thing is, when I started, we had crows. And that's pretty much all I'd see here, the occasional buzzard. Now I'm seeing things I'd never seen before.
Mm-hmm. But you're not inviting people in to look at these beautiful things, are you?
Well, what we're trying to do is this, because my main goal has always been science, because we have to discover, we have to learn about nature, and there's a lot of science been pushed by communities who have a financial interest. So they favor certain elements of the science. But here at Dunsany, we are trying to keep an open mind on science. So we're open to the universities to study. So Trinity and DCU are currently working with us, doing base studies, learning about what's here and what's growing, and studying some of the things that are happening, because it's not just animals returning. We've also seen behavioral changes in the animals. One such behavior change, which is fascinating, we're studying it this year, is that the deer in Dunsany have started turning on some of the invasive species, which is fascinating. So what that means is that they've been destroying things like cherry laurel and rhododendron, which I know many of the people in Kerry National Parks would be very jealous.
They're controlling the growth of it. But who's controlling the deer?
You see, I don't control the deer. That's another thing that I've always been a little controversial by. I've always been very sure that nature would eventually adjust itself. Now, that is very controversial, I admit. Now, so I do not control animals here. Mm-hmm. Here, all animals are considered equal. We are trying to, give this as a symbol of an oasis of life, and that's what I'm trying to do here.
Porrick, what's your view on that? You know, if you have a population of deer in a rewilded area like this, do they need to be controlled?
So we've seen this story from Yellowstone Park is particularly instructive, where they introduced wolves back in the 1990s. And we saw the role that predators play in controlling and regulating ecosystems. And that's absolutely vital. Obviously, in Ireland, the biggest predator we have is the badger. So that entire layer of our ecosystem is missing. So I think if we're serious about rewilding large areas, and particularly the return of large areas of native forest, we're going to have to discuss the return of all of our wild animals so that it does become a self-regulating ecosystem.
Wolves.
Yes, yeah. Wolves and lynx as well were also in Ireland, but also creatures like wild boar, which are very important in forest ecosystems. And in fact, there's lots of creatures that are just as important, like fungi and insects and things that we know very little about. So you can't restore an ecosystem by, you know, humans picking and choosing which animals they'd like to see and which ones they prefer not to see.
Mm-hmm. So do you introduce those animals? Do humans introduce them? The wolves, the lynx, the wild boar?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we have experience of this in Ireland since the 1990s. We have been reintroducing top predators, the eagles, for instance, in Donegal and in Kerry, and they have been largely successful projects. So this is not a new concept. It's been done all over the world. They've been reintroducing lynx to Germany, for instance. They've reintroduced bears to parts of France. So this is standard conservation science.
Randall, what would you think about introducing a predator like that?
I think I would not be able to go to the supermarket anymore. The thing is, I absolutely agree that predators are a major part of the landscape. Now, there are some practicality issues here where I am, because I am in a heavily built-up area. So if I introduce wolves, certain children might go missing. So there is a little bit of...
that would not be good.
No, it wouldn't, and I certainly wouldn't get Christmas cards anymore.
The only reason? Because there would be community objections why you wouldn't introduce wolves?
I'm also, I've always been very keen on the introduction of wild animals, but I've also been experienced in seeing nature adjusting. Now, I don't mean that the deer have started cannibalizing themselves or anything like that, but we are seeing these changes. And I've noticed it in other things as well. And there is really a question mark what happens given enough time. And I, like I said, we've started seeing things go after invasive species, which do not make sense because there's no, as far as I have found, as far as the scientists have discovered, there's no examples of this happening in Ireland. So what's happening at Dunsany is unique. Mm-hmm. Now, if that's possible, if this reaction could happen, what could happen in 20 years' time? Maybe a disease might affect the deer. Maybe something else could happen behavior-wise. The truth is, it's a question mark.
Yes,
and that's why I'm very keen to study that and see what kind of possibilities that could create.
We're out of time.
Dunsany.
Paul, did you want to say something very quickly?
Just on the wolves, I think if we were to ever do such an ambitious project, it would be something that would require the support of everybody on this island. It's not something that can be done in Randall's estate or in a national park. Yeah. It'll be a national project.
Well, we might be quite some way away from that at this moment in time. Pádraig Fógarty from the Irish Wildlife Trust and Randall Plunkett, thank you both indeed for joining us. Let's go to the newsroom and Brian Jennings.